for joining me today, listening to What Women Must Know. This is a show, as you know, empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And as always, it is so important to really understand what's going on, to be able to make the choices that really give you as much insight and knowledge and truthful assessment of situations so you can make those informed decisions. And I want to thank you for joining me again for another great conversation that I have planned for you. If you are listening for the very first time, I want to welcome you. I also want to invite you to my website, which is What Women Must Know. And that also is my Facebook page. So like me over there, because I'm constantly adding new information and strategies and articles and sometimes some really fun recipes. So it's all a way to just support you in this ever-expanding universe of knowledge and truth. And I hope you'll join me there. And speaking of the ever-expanding universe of knowledge and truth, we're going to be talking about a subject that is really going to be quite profound, quite relevant to all of you. We're going to be talking about change, how to navigate change, how to be graceful in a world, in a life that really is all about change. And when I was preparing for this radio show, I remembered that quote about change, and I found the exact quote, so I want to share that with you. It's from a Greek philosopher, Heraclitus, and he is quoted as saying, "Change is the only constant in life." So think about that. Change is the only constant in life. And for some reason, we have a really hard time as a species embracing change. So we're going to have a conversation about change, about changeability, with my guest today. And she is Sharon Weil, who is a wonderful author. Well, let me just tell you a little bit about her. She's long engaged in the conversation about courage and change as an author, activist, award-winning filmmaker, and somatic educator. She is the author of the novel Donnie and Ursula Save the World, a quirky political romantic mishap adventure, and Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. She is also the host of the acclaimed podcast Passing for Normal. And Sharon has been a director, producer, and editor of many film and television projects, narrative, documentary, commercials, and music videos. She has directed several original theatrical productions, as well as written and performed her own work in one-woman shows and shared spoken word evenings. She is a film graduate of the new NYU Tisch School of the Arts, and her recent book, and what we're going to be exploring, is Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. And it's my pleasure to welcome Sharon to the show today. Hello, Sharon.
Hi there. Great to be here.
Well, thank you for joining me, because we are living in this world of rapid change. Change is all around us. Change is going on within us all the time. And yet we seem to try to hold on and yes, to keep things as they are. So in your experience, and I know you wrote this book about change, and maybe we'll just start by asking you the question, what made you focus on not just a book about change, changeability, but you have been, in your creative way, bringing into being other supportive material? You have a Changeability playbook rather than workbook, and the Changeability deck. It's based on your seven principles, which we'll talk about. It's a deck of cards that you can work with on a daily basis. What made you so passionate about this subject of change?
Well, you know, they say we write what we need to know, or we teach what we need to know, right? And so oftentimes our curiosities lead us to the places that we want to understand more about or we need strengthening. But I have been working with change and adaptability, more flexibility for many, many years. As you mentioned, when you were introducing me that I have been a somatic educator for many years in a fluid movement work called Continuum, which is based on the premise that we are primarily fluid beings, that we're, you know, depends on who you talk to, 70 to 80% water, fluids in our tissues, in our makeup, and that it is the fluids, the nature of the changeability of fluids, that is the agent of change within ourselves. And so I've been working through the body, through breath, with many, many people, teaching them how to be more flexible and adaptable in their bodies and therefore in their lives. And so that's one way that I've always been interested in adaptability. And then when I wrote the novel that you mentioned, Donnie and Ursula Save the World, which is a funny, quirky, sexy, political novel about, it's about the power of Eros to motivate people beyond their small selves to do great things. And these mismatched lovers, Donnie and Ursula, find themselves backed into becoming activists and taking on an agribusiness giant who wants to own all the seeds of the world. But in that book, what was driving me in that book, in a funny way, in a fun way, was really this question of what does it take to be brave? And when is that moment where you say enough is enough and I'm going to take action on behalf of something or for someone that I love? And that question really drove me because I felt like in some ways I was a reluctant activist. You know, I have been working with lots of activists who I felt were just amazing in their willingness to take on, big business, big pharma, the whole issue of seeds, environment. And I wanted to know, how is it that you're brave? You know, how is it that you are brave in the face of change? And what does it take to really meet change well and meet it with flexibility? So I started this podcast, Passing for Normal, Conversations with Artists, Activists, and Awakeners about Seeding Change in the World, and talked to many people who I felt were innovative change makers across lots of different fields. So definitely in the permaculture and ecology area, and revisioning medicine and spirituality and social change and all sorts of artists and people working with creativity, embodiment, meditation. And I was asking them, you know, not only about their work, but about how they approach change. And I started to hear common things in their approaches, the very organic sort of approaches, starting with deep listening and just really understanding what's needed in this moment. And from that, I wrote the book, Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change, which features, you know, extensive excerpts from these interviews, from these people who are just so wise and amazing. And it really set me on this change and changeability journey that I'm on right now in really helping others to find the tools for themselves about how to meet change better, because we all need it, right?
Well, you know, change is the way we evolve and grow, but it evokes such fear. And as you're talking, I was just thinking of a time in my life where I had to make some big changes. I was changing the nature of my relationship. You know, I was getting divorced, and I had to step out. And I remember that time as being so terrifying. I felt like I was going to, you know, fail. I felt like I was going to die. I don't, you know, these feelings came up in me. They were irrational. They're irrational. I mean, you know, I'm a competent, capable woman, right?
Yes,
but
right.
It was terrifying, and I really resisted the change. I knew I had to make it because I was so unhappy in the situation I found myself in, but I was terrified of taking that leap. And it's almost like there are times where we have to literally, life, you know, or maybe it's our own wise self, forces us out of the nest, you know, forces us
to
jump off. But it was with such absolute, fear-based sensations going on within me that I, did everything not to do it. And the happy ending to the story is that when I did take that leap and I did go through all the things that you have to sort out when you're changing the nature of a relationship and, you know, where you live and just everything, the end result was that everything in my life flourished in a way I could not have imagined. That's the key.
That's the key is your imagination, right? Because, you know, so much of our fears are really imagined fears, right? They're anticipated fears. They're imagined fears. What is going to happen? What will happen? And, of course, we can use our imaginations for good, or we can use our imaginations for evil. I don't really mean evil, but I mean that we can turn it against ourselves, because we can imagine really great outcomes, or we can also imagine really scary outcomes, or, you know, and I think you know that our body records imagined fear the same as it records actual fear, right? So when we imagine fearful situations, we actually, you know, our adrenaline starts going and our heart rate races, and we are putting ourselves in the state as if the bear were coming at us. And so, you know, these fears, though imagined, though anticipated, are actually quite real in the sensory world. And so, and it's the unknown, you know, change puts us in the unknown. Even when it's good change, it puts us in the unknown, it disorients us, it disrupts us, it throws us off balance. And so, you know, we need to find ways, tools, practices to be able to restore our balance when we're off balance. You know, and again, that was a lot of what I was doing and do within the movement work, literally like finding balance, literally how do you, you know, find new supports when the existing supports are knocked out from under you. But these are huge changes that you're talking about, you know, divorce and moving and changing careers. And, you know, we could talk about, you know, how our identity, you know, gets so affected. But it's just that we don't know. We just don't know what's going to happen, and that causes us to be fearful, or it causes us to be reluctant to want to make those changes because we just don't know. And so depending upon how well you embrace the unknown, how comfortable you are with not knowing, will determine how easily you're willing to step into change.
So that brings us to another really important point is the preparation a learning and accessing and practicing resources within us that allow us to go with the flow better in life, whether that's meditation exercises, whether that is movement exercises, whether that's writing exercises. We have to access resources. I mean, life is about collecting the strengths and the abilities to understand how to navigate through life. And the more we have those resources available to us in whatever form, the more equipped we are to go through the various seasons that life will inevitably provide us. And I think that's what you're really offering in the work you're doing, is what are some of the strategies and some of the awarenesses that we need to have. Because if we're dealing with a financial situation, if we're dealing with a health situation, if we're dealing with a relationship challenge, children challenge, whatever the issue is, it's requiring us to change, to do something different, to, you know, look in a different way. That's the way out of the situation, is to be able to find some way through change to have another perspective, or be more resourceful so you can deal with the situation more effectively. So you have what you call the 7 principles of change. So can we explore that?
Absolutely. So, you know, in my conversations with all these amazing change innovators, I started to hear commonalities in how they approached change, and, you know, coupled that with what I already knew and understood about how best to navigate change. And so I arrived at 7 principles for change that work interdependently as a wheel. So I'll list them for you, but I just want you to know it's not a list and there's no hierarchy to it. It's like a wheel, like a template that you can put on top of a change that you are going through. And you can ask yourself, do I have enough of this? Is that present? Is this present? Because I find that these seven principles are common to all change situations, whether it's personal, social, environmental. You know, they're present in all change situations or need to be. And so let's talk about them for a minute. So the seven principles are: bring awareness, meaning what is the change and really recognizing that change needs to happen. Listen deeply, asking your, you know, paying attention to the cues around you. What do I know? How do I know about what needs to change? Find community, which means find help and support in any way you can. Proceed incrementally, because all change moves incrementally, and so it's best to take it slowly and bit by bit. Align with nature speaks to proper timing, that there's often a good or better timing for change to take place, and often it's aligned with the seasons. Have hope. Without hope, I wouldn't even try. Speaks to imagination. It speaks to desire. And spark fire is what fuels that change. Spark fire is our compelling reason why. It's our passion, it's our courage, it's our eros, it's our playfulness. So all together, bring awareness, listen deeply, find community, proceed incrementally, align with nature, have hope, and spark fire all work together to help support us in making the changes or in meeting the changes that come upon us. So either initiating change or adapting to changes that come.
So these are all the facets that are part of a change process. And working with those seven principles, how would you advise people to, you know, to put them into action in their lives?
Right. So let's use an so I'm going through a change, right? So let's say changing my job, or I'm retiring. I talk to a lot of people who are sort of in that phase of life where they're changing their careers or they're retiring. And so you look and you say, okay, well, what is my awareness? Well, my awareness is not only that I need to change my job, either I'm being downsized or I want very much to change my job. That's my awareness about it. Listen deeply. What is it I want to happen? What is it that needs to happen? What are the forces in my life that are moving me away from this job and towards something else, even if I don't know what that next thing is? You know, I'm just going to take a sideline here. There is a seen and unseen aspect of change. You know, we see the seen aspect of change, but there is a trajectory, an unseen trajectory that's leading up to the moment when we see change. And there's also an unseen trajectory that goes on after the change into the we don't know what's going to happen yet part, right? But sometimes when you listen deeply, when you pay attention, when you listen to your intuition, or you hear what your friends are saying, or you pay attention to what's around you, you can get information, get ideas, get signs of what is needed next. So find community would be, you know, other resources, other experts, finding out what jobs are available if I want to change careers altogether, asking people who I know that are working in that field, or finding out how I can get not only involved, but what supports do I need. You know, when we are in a time of change, we're very vulnerable. We're off balance. You know, and so it's tender, and we need to have more support than ever, in terms of friends, family, experts, like-minded groups, physical practice, spiritual practice, whatever it is that's going to support us and give us a rhythm, make us feel, like we can go on. Very important. So gathering your resources in terms of people and ideas, find community. Proceed incrementally is often one that people just have a hard time with because we want it now, we want it to happen now. And so proceeding incrementally is how change moves. Change moves incrementally. You know, life moves incrementally from breath to breath and from moment to moment. And a lot of times when people, have changes that they want to make or think about changes that they want to make, they get shut down because they extend their goals too far ahead. And really, what we need to do is accept that, you can do just a little bit each day, or you start small and you ripple out, like in terms of building new contacts. You talk to the person, two people that you know, and then you ask, well, who do you know? And then who do they know? And how can it ripple out? Sometimes starting small and rippling out is the best strategy for making a change. Align with nature. I find that, is the dead of winter the best time to make this change? When everyone is feeling cold and wants to pull in, or is there another season that's better to make this move, make this change, in terms of like a business cycle? Understanding what the rhythms are and the timing is. Have hope. Without hope, I wouldn't even try. So what's going to lift me? What's going to inspire me? Maybe I look to other people and I see, they're doing fabulous things. Let's say I want to move, my career from some, corporate job I've had, and I want to do something that I see is more creative. And so I get inspired by people who are doing it, or I get inspired by the artwork itself. And so that keeps renewing my sense of, yes, I can do it. It can be done. And then spark fire is, what is the way I'm going to fire myself up, even on a daily basis? What is my compelling reason to make this change? People say to me, I know I should make this change, or I want to make this change, but I just can't get myself to do it. And so what I say to them is, well, what's your compelling reason why? And if you find that you want to make a change and you're not making a change, then you've got to strengthen your compelling reason. You have to make your compelling reason more compelling or more urgent or more important. And so sometimes the compelling reason is, I got fired and I got to find a job next week. Okay, so that's a good compelling reason. Or maybe the compelling reason is, I feel like my soul is going to die if I don't start doing some creative work. And so that's a compelling reason. Oftentimes, I find that the most compelling reasons are on behalf of who or what we love most. Who or what we love. A lot of people say that they're compelled by their fears. I have to make this change or else I'm afraid that this will happen. But really, fear, as you know, freezes us. It freezes the body. It stops us down. And so we have to have something that is stronger to burn through that fear, and that's our compelling reason, that's our passion, that's our courage, and I find that most of the time it's coming from love.
Great insights. I was thinking, when I was a psychotherapist, I would facilitate personal growth workshops and courses, and I still do say this, and that is that, when you're thinking of change, it's like taking a baby step. It's not like eating the whole cake. Have a little taste of it. Yeah. And I remember in one situation, in one of my courses, there was a gentleman who was there because obviously he wanted to change, but he was so set in patterns. He was so predictable. He would tell us that he had the same breakfast every day for 40 years. So in the course of that weekend experience, I really encouraged him just to maybe change his breakfast. Can you just change your breakfast? Do something different. And
right.
He had such resistance, Sharon. He said, I like my breakfast. I don't want to change my breakfast. It's like, okay, okay, keep your breakfast. Anyway, he came in on the last day of the course, and he was just like all aglow, and he just looked so different. And he shared that he decided he was going to change his breakfast. So instead of having his traditional oatmeal breakfast or whatever he had, he did something different, you know, had eggs, whatever. But in that act of the willingness to take a little baby step that was just changing a breakfast menu for one day,
yes,
everything changed. His demeanor changed. His perspective changed. He was much more open. It was such a fascinating experience and a great lesson about the willingness. When we talk about change, which is a really scary thing, we often think of taking these quantum leaps. But actually, it can just be a little teeny thing that changes, because by just changing a little teeny thing, we're different. Things have changed. The universe has changed. It's not the same way anymore. And it can lead to other little teeny steps that can eventually bring about something really profound.
I love that. I love that. Because anytime you change one thing in a pattern, you break the pattern. You know, in the work that the continuum work that I teach, it's a lot about breaking habitual patterns or opening up habitual patterns to see what else is possible in terms of movement, in terms of how we look at ourselves as a body. And so anytime you change one thing about a pattern, you've changed the pattern. And that's really encouraging for people who feel like they're very trapped. You know, they're very trapped in their patterns, or, you know, this is a great example because, you know, it seems like to some people, it seems like a simple thing. Change your breakfast, for goodness sake, you know. But for this man, it was very important. It was how he defined himself. It was how he, you know, how he felt safe, right? He created safety in his life. You know, one of the things we understand about change is that, and the risk to change, is that we have to feel safe in some way in order to risk changing. There has to be some sense of safety, some sense of ground, some sense, and usually that's people find that the familiar really creates a sense of safety, soothing, you know, but it's a dynamic life, right? And that even though you want to keep your breakfast the same every day, something's going to change about that day. You know, something, especially if it has to be at the same time, you know, we want to build in a flexibility so that when something in life does come to challenge that habit or that pattern, we can roll with it, right? You know, someone who is so set in a pattern can get very disrupted if that pattern gets changed, right? And so we want to be able to build in those flexibilities. And what you're saying is just the littlest thing can change it. If he couldn't change his menu, maybe he could have just changed where he sat.
Right.
Like, yeah. And had a new view while he's eating the same breakfast, or, you know, ate 20 minutes later or something. There's often something even within a very tight pattern that you can change, begin to change, especially if you can find safety. You know, you feel like, okay, when you said that, you know, you were at a period of time where so much was disrupted for you, how did you find safety? How did you find ground in order to be able to start making those changes?
I definitely got support from community. I think that was really important. I obviously started to take some action steps that would move me rather than feeling frozen, you know, starting to look for a place to live, or what I needed to do to continue with my business, for instance. And so I did some action steps, and I
would see acupuncturists and chiropractors,
yes.
You know,
right.
Support my body.
Support, yes.
Yeah, because it was really stressing the body out. And, in fact, that's what I was going to say. And what I often recommend to my patients, if you're going through any kind of stressful event in one's life, you really have to support your body because, as you were saying, the fear and the intensity of the situation has consequences to how your body functions. And, you know, whether it's working with acupuncture or chiropractic or some somatic therapy like you were doing, or whether it's adding more adrenal support into your protocol, so you're supporting the adrenals that really take a toll when you're under stress. You know, these are the things that help you weather the storm, so to speak, the unknown, fearful time. And so that's what I did, you know, and I also had a compelling reason because I knew that it was time to change. I mean, I got an astrology reading. I did everything.
Yes, right.
I
all
could
the supports
do.
That you yes, you found all the supports you could find.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, because I knew the time had come and I could not stay where I was in that situation, and I mean, just in that situation, my moment in my life, my soul's journey, I had to move. And you know, I think for most of us, if we look back at times of change where we have been frightened or resisted it, I mean, I can go through many experiences where I had to change.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to. My ego, personality, whatever you want to call it, just says, no, this is, I want to stay here. This is comfortable.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Like it here. But whenever we do it, however that event occurs, on the other side, we find out why the urge has been there to move, to change, because there's something greater waiting for us. There's
yeah.
more possibilities, like a bigger space awaits us. But we often have to go kicking and screaming.
Oh, yes, kicking and screaming for sure. Well, Continuum says that we move in our lives as we move in our bodies. So however it is I move in my body, whether if my body is stiff and tight, then my life moves stiff and tight. If you know, my body is highly bound in habit and pattern, then my life is bound in habit and pattern. If my body has fluid movement, if my body has you know, a playfulness to it, then my life has a fluid movement and a playfulness to it. So addressing our bodies and addressing what needs to change or what needs to be supported in our bodies will play out in the rest of our lives, because it's like, you know, you're working with a limited palate. You're working with a, you know, also I would say that how we move in our bodies is how we move in our imaginations. And so no wonder I'm afraid. If I can't imagine, you know, it's hard to imagine the unimaginable. You know, it's hard to imagine what I've never imagined before, right? You know, and oftentimes that imagining what I've never imagined before is really more a process of receptivity, of being open to what, like I was saying, the listen deeply, being open to what messages, what information, what inspiration can come to me, but it only can come to me if my system is more receptive. If I'm not as guarded, I'm not as bound, my muscles are literally not as tight. And so by opening up my body with breath, with movement, with acupuncture, with all of the things that help me have more literal circulation, more, you know, if I have better circulation in my body, I have better circulation in my ideas, I have better circulation in my relationships. It's all one thing, right? And so, so I'm just, you know, giving the pitch here for for attending the body as your primary resource for initiating change or being adaptable to change.
So that's really fascinating, and talking about the body as a reflection, as a hologram, so to speak, of how we live life. So just exploring that a little bit more, if people want to
use the body or make allow the body to be more flexible, what are some of the things they can do? What are some actual practical recommendations you have for people, especially if people notice they, you know, they are stiff or they, you know, they just can't bend and touch the floor or, you know, they just find their movements are maybe painful, whatever. What, accepting that our body, and if we work with our body, we can begin a process that kind of radiates out into all aspects of our life. Where do we begin?
Well, I would say we begin with any kind of movement practice that that really attends the breath. So really works with breath because, you know, when we change our breath, we can change the scene almost immediately. You know, if my breath is constricted and tight and shallow, like I'm holding my breath, and we often do hold our breath when we meet with a sudden change. It's like, right? We catch our breath, and sometimes we hold our breath without even knowing it, as if to stop the movement of change. And so if I just relax my breath and allow my breath to soften and go deeper, I can start to feel better. I can start to feel more relaxed, less anxious. And so any practice that works with the breath, whether it's, you know, yoga is readily available now all over the place, or whether it's some sort of martial arts, or, you know, the work that I do called Continuum, which is not as readily available, but if you can find it in your area, it's a profound kind of movement work. Feldenkrais is an amazing kind of somatic practice. There are many different beautiful practices that you can do, get involved with, that help open up the body along the lines of breath and fluid movement. If not,
it's so interesting you're talking about breath, Sharon, because I, in my psychotherapy practice, I actually focused as one of my main modalities was the breath. And it was really powerful. I would just teach people how to breathe in a relaxed, open, circular, full breath, and guide them into a session that could last for, 40 or more minutes, just relaxing, following the breath. And first of all, it was allowing people to open up the breath that had been so constricted and restricted, so they were actually getting more oxygen into the system. But it's not about oxygen even, it's about chi, it's about life force, it's about relaxing tensions in the body. And profound things happen for people, profound insights, healing, physical healing, emotional healing. It was so fantastic. I loved working with the breath and just supporting people as things would surface, feelings would bubble up, memories would bubble up. And then if you just keep breathing, you actually complete this cycle of energy moving through. So the emotion will peak and then move on to another expression. The thoughts will change. The pain will dissipate. And you're able to get to not just another place, well, I guess you would say another place in life, because things have changed within you. Your insights and your suppressed energies have been opened up and could flow. And it was a very powerful modality for personal change and, psychological shifts.
Yes, and it's so primary. I mean, our breath is essential, right? It's we begin our life on the breath, we end our life on the last breath, and in between we are having this respiration with the world. You know, we're taking in the world with each breath. We are releasing ourselves out into the world with each exhale and the pause in between. And so, our breathing is essential. It's a nutrient. It's a nutrient like food and water and air. Breath is, one of my guests on my podcast and in the book, Robert Littman works with movement and breath. He's a breath educator. His work is called The Breathable Body. And he talks about how anxiety is really not so much an emotional issue as it is a habitual breathing pattern. And that it is, the body is literally starving for oxygen, and it gets anxious because it can't be fed. And so that by working with the breath and changing your breathing pattern, opening up the breath, anxiety levels go way down. Now, of course, there's emotion that goes on top of it, but oftentimes if people are in an anxious state, if they check out their breath and they shift their breath, then the anxiety levels go way down because, you know, the body's just going, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, and because it's not getting enough breath. And so everything begins with the breath, and the breath, you know, it's right there. It's like your easiest tool. What's your easiest tool for change? Change your breath. Watch
right
your breath.
There.
Change your breath. It's right there.
Right.
You're carrying it. You're carrying it with you all the time. You have the tool with you all the time. People take it for granted. You know, people only really think about their breath when they're having trouble breathing. Otherwise, oh yeah, I'm breathing. Hey, I don't have to think about that. You know, we're very conservative, we humans. And we, you know, our bodies are set up that way. We don't want to think about the things that are not problems for us, right? And only when they become problems do we really give it our full attention. But most of us, according to Robert, you know, are not breathing properly, not breathing fully, even when we think we are. So, working with the breath, number one tool.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to me. And the more we have an awareness that we're holding our breath and just take a big breath, the more we stay in the present time rather than lock in emotions. So, okay, so we've talked about working with the body. We've talked about being flexible, maybe taking some yoga, maybe doing some stretching, practicing the breath, being aware of breathing in when you're holding your breath, and just letting that, you know, circular breath. There's so many resources that you can go to, so many apps, so many meditations, breath meditations. People can easily find something that works for them.
Yes, and let me also be, you know, I'm also a big proponent of dancing. You know, I'm a dancer from way back. And so there's also the kind of movement that really gets us fired up, right? You know, running and dancing and swimming and, you know, the kinds of not, I don't want to think of them as exercise, I want to think of them as movement that really get our heart pumping and get our muscles twitching and get us, you know, our expressiveness has a way of coming out. So it's not just the, you know, working with the body is not just with the quiet, more gentle forms, but also where you really kick it. You know, you really kick it. You learn a lot about yourself as well when you really, you know, are just dancing full out, or when you're running full out, or doing biking or something that really brings you to yourself in that way.
And I think whenever we're doing something of exercise, we're changing the focus for the time being. So we're not there in this fearful, anxious, or angry state. We actually are shifting our emotions. We're shifting our attention, at least for the time being, which is certainly a relief for our body and maybe brings us more insight or intuition, you know, creative ideas. Things happen when you're in that state. You certainly don't get those insights when you stay stuck.
Right, and if you think about emotion as being another kind of wave motion, you know, that can move through, or like thinking emotion as different qualities of water, you know, turbulent water, stagnant water, flowing water, you know, but that they need to move. Our emotions need to move. And so the ways in which we can move our bodies and move our breath helps emotion also move and find a way out, right? We're not just holding it in. We're finding a way to move it out.
You know, you're such a creative person. I mean, you know, you write, you playwright, you dance, you just do so many things as a creative expression. So my thought, and actually my question to you, what advice do you have to offer people about the role of creativity in supporting change in life?
Mm. Well, you know, it was so fun, and because I still do the podcast Passing for Normal, but in talking to the artists, you know, and the writers and the dancers and the painters and you know, the act of creativity is really the act of genuine innovation. You know, it's kind of a play between form, like mastering a current form, and taking it someplace new. You know, how do we really find something new or find something that really engages us? And it's, you know, we're led by curiosity, right? The artist is led by curiosity. What interests me, or what about this? You know, coming to a moment, coming to a tree, coming to a flower, coming to an event, coming to a relationship with a sense of inquiry, a sense of, I don't know. I'm looking at, like, with fresh eyes, I'm looking at this flower as if for the first time. And what is it? Asking, what is this? And what is, you know, and the same thing about my own ideas. You know, what is it about this idea, about this story, about this character that really is drawing me? And just the willingness to explore. You know, a lot of times when I write, I just kind of babble to myself on paper. You know, I'll ask myself, well, what about this character? Well, what do I know? You know, what don't I know? What do I need to know? I'll ask myself, what else do I need to know? And there, you know, answers will come, or they won't come immediately, but if I keep asking the question, if I keep staying in a place of inquiry, you know, oftentimes you ask the question, you know, how are you, or who are you? And the first answer that comes is the automatic answer. It's the socially correct answer. It's the automatic answer. But if you keep asking that same question, who are you? Okay, so who are you? I'm Sharon, I'm a woman, I'm a writer, you know, those are my first answers. But then I ask the question again, and maybe I drop down to some other answers. And then I ask the question again, and I keep asking myself the question, and at some point I'm going to start to hit that strata of the unexpected. And that's really what creativity is it's courting the unknown, but trusting that unknown exists. It already exists. You know, when I'm writing a story, I trust that that story and those characters already exist. They're already formed somewhere, and it's just for me to receive them and for me to put myself in a place of receptivity so that they can find me and we can be in conversation, so to speak, once they arrive. So it really, I feel like the, you know, creativity, it's not necessarily about the finished product. It's not about, you know, the craft of how you form it, yet there is craft, and people can learn craft. Anyone can learn the craft of writing, the craft of painting, the craft of making music. You can learn the craft. But that those, you know, the where the story comes from, where the subject comes from, Is that process of inquiry and receptivity that is almost like a courtship, and a willingness to not, again, we're going to get back to the willingness to not know, but to say, I don't know. I don't know how this story is supposed to end. I don't know how it's going to end, but I just keep asking the question, and at some point, the answer comes.
When I think about creativity, you know, we often think of people who are really good writers and good dancers or good musicians, but I'm thinking of coloring books right now. And I'm thinking of just taking a coloring book And I have a card that has a butterfly, and it has all the little, you know, lines that you have to then color in with whatever. And, I, you know, it's just sitting down with some colored pens, and whether it's a card, whether it's a coloring book, as an example, merely as an example, of just being present and starting to color, because you can lose yourself in that moment when you are in a creative process. And it could be a simple creative process, but by losing yourself in that moment, you're present again. You're present. You're not worrying. You're not anxious. You're not fearful. You are present. And in that moment, you get ideas, you get resources, or you just feel good. So it could be just
absolutely
as simple as a coloring book, right?
So the coloring book goes back to proceed incrementally, right? You know, take that small step. So a coloring book has all the lines, they're already written for you. They're already, you know, all that shape has, the form has been created for you. Great. So you don't have to worry about what's the form, what's the picture going to be. And you can just bring yourself to it in choosing the color, in choosing how you're going to shade it. And that in itself, right, just experiencing the relationship of color, the act of putting pen to paper, the movement of your hand as you're doing, putting pen to paper, and, you know, and the satisfaction of just creating something, filling this in, it may lead to the next time you want to go outside the lines, or it may need to, on the back, you want to, you know, start to embellish, or it's enough to just take that little step, right? That's the first step. That's that small step that you're talking about, changing what you have for breakfast. Yeah,
exactly, because you can just do it for 5 minutes. You know, just have it, do it for 5 minutes. Need a little break, do it for 5 minutes. So the simple thing shifts your attention, shifts your focus, puts you into a different part of your brain, actually. And you know,
and probably if you were, and probably if you were to take notice, you would notice that your breath softens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unless you're very like worried about going outside the lines, or you're very worried about, you know, your color choices or something. But you will probably notice that your breath softens as you get involved in this.
So in the few minutes we have left, can you talk a bit about your playbook and your changeability deck?
Sure, absolutely. So the original book is Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change, based on these conversations that I've been having with amazing change makers, and they're included the first season of the podcast. And I want to say Passing for Normal is passing numeral for normal. And you can listen to the podcast on SoundCloud, on iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. So that book, and I found that when people were reading the book, they were also thinking about their own change. You know, they were reading these inspiring excerpts from these amazing change makers, but they were reflecting upon their own change. So I created the Changeability Playbook, and we call it a playbook instead of a workbook, because who wouldn't rather play than work? But it's how to navigate your own change. And so there are question sets in here, and there are little activities to fill in, and there are short essays about different aspects of change, resistance, proper timing, unbridled joy, courage, as well as questions, ways to ask yourself questions about different types of change, relationship change, health change, job change, social change. And it's all in this little book that can fit into your purse or backpack, and it's a great way to work with your own change. The Changeability deck is a deck of 48 reflection cards, like angel cards or oracle cards, where they are divided into the seven principles, and on each of the cards is a question on the bottom that helps prompt you to perhaps rethink, reframe how you're thinking about your change that you're going through. So I just picked up one right now. Listen deeply. What is the feedback the world is telling me? Am I moving too fast to feel? That's the question on the bottom. Or have hope. Without it, I wouldn't even try. How can I write a new story about the story I am in? So people find that they can, you know, pick up a card, you know, like one card per day and just use it as a way to help them journal or help them think about the changes that they're going through, or they can play with them in different ways. So those are all meant to be tools to help people reframe the way they think about change and help to build more what I call changeability, which is flexibility and effectiveness in and hopefully ease in navigating change in any and all ways.
Well, I love all those resources. They're just fun, creative ways to support a process of change. And you do some fun things in your workbook, you know, just like, you know, how fast is your change happening? And you have, like, you can put little squiggles to express
That's right.
your change. So, I mean, you're using your right brain, you're using your left brain, but it's just fun ways to explore a process. And the cards are always great because I like cards. You can just pick one a day and just trust that that's a message you need to look at and explore. So you've done some amazing creative support systems here for change, Sharon. It's fantastic what you're doing. So let me remind people that we're talking to Sharon Weil. She is the author of Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. And in addition to this wonderful book of inspirational artists and change makers, creative people talking about change, she has created Changeability Playbook and the Changeability Deck. So the next question is, where do people go to find this, to find you? Is your best website SharonWeilAuthor.com?
Absolutely. So SharonWeilAuthor.com is the best way to find me. You can find information about all the books, about the podcast, about the continuum work that I do. It's all there. And, you know, to find the books, you can, they're all available on Amazon, available online, available in Barnes & Noble, available in your local bookstore, which is even more preferable. And if they're not there, you can ask them to order them. You know, they make great gifts, I just want to say, because the holidays are coming up. You know, because who doesn't need support in meeting, you know, the myriad of changes that we're all facing. And I do want to say, because we've been focusing our conversation about personal change, but just to say that these principles, these seven principles of change and the understanding of how change moves applies to social change, environmental change, political change. It's all, these are universal principles and they apply across the board.
So I want everyone to know that your name is spelt, it's Sharon Weil, W-E-I-L, author.com for the website, for Sharon's website.
Yes,
Sharon Weil,
uh-huh.
W-E-I-L. So, could you spell these things out?
I know.
So it's SharonWeilAuthor.com. Go check out what Sharon's doing. It's really inspirational and can really help all of us as we travel the change, because remember, the only constant is change. So Sharon, thanks so much for being with us today. It's been such a pleasure to talk with you and have this conversation, and I just wish you all the best success and many more creative expressions in your future.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been an absolute delight speaking with you, and I really do hope that your listeners can glean some tools from what we've been talking about.
And I'm sure they will. And thank you for listening to me today for another opportunity to explore and what women must know. And I just want to leave you with this last thought. Always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.